Good evening and welcome to Coast AM. I'm Dave Schrader. I'll be your host for this evening. Thank you for joining me. Got a very interesting show to share with you this evening. A lot of famous hauntings around the world. The Entity case, the Amityville case, the haunting in Connecticut, haunting in Georgia, and the Conjuring case, which was featured in a movie last year. Very high-grossing movie, as a matter of fact. Well, there's a story that began in the 1990s. A home in California that has a very unique twist to it. A very communicative ghost, a very friendly ghost, who has made his presence known through photography. Many different images have appeared over the years. Many different experiments have been done in this home. As a matter of fact, it was featured on the TV show Sightings, Fact or Faked the Paranormal Files. And it has left researchers stymied by what's going on. Now, if you're familiar with the Ghost Rider case, it is very controversial. Polaroid pictures being taken in a home, messages forming as though they're written in puffy clouds on the front of these pictures that directly correlate with the questions that are being asked. Bizarre imagery, strange pictures that have popped up since the 1990s, every time they make an attempt to make communication using Polaroid film. The controversy comes in because there are many ways to fake this. But what happens when you take the experiment out of the hands of the people making the claims and third parties are involved and still get the same results? Well, we're going to find out more about this story from our guest, Joe Augustin, in the next hour. And then at the top of the next hour, we're going to be joined by Bill Murphy from Sci-Fi Channel's Fact or Fake, The Paranormal Files. He's going to talk to us a little bit about the experiment they did for his TV series and a paranormal experiment they did again in 2012 with 50 witnesses on hand. It's an amazing story, one that'll make you stand back and think. And I believe we're going to get some of the pictures to put up on the Coast to Coast AM website. So go check out coasttocoastam.com to get more information on tonight's guests, on the book that's coming out about it, and to see some of the firsthand evidential photographs that we've got available for you. That's all coming up tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Good evening and welcome back. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader, filling in for George Norrie. Our guest, Joe Augustin, love of all things spooky and strange was instilled by his grandmother. She told him stories of ghosts and exorcisms she'd actually witnessed as a farm girl growing up in Europe. Compulsively creative since childhood, Joe won awards for his oil paintings, but was later drawn to writing and filmmaking. And after winning a Nissan Focus Award for writing, he completed a producing fellowship at the American Film Institute. He wrote and produced the original cult horror film Night of the Demons and followed it with a sequel. Joe quit screenwriting to write novels, which he claims is a more satisfying medium for a writer, providing a direct, unfiltered connection to the reader. He's an active member of the Horror Writers Association, and Joe shares a genuinely haunted but very happy home in Philadelphia with two cats and an occasional mischievous spirit, a subject that he is covering in a book called Ghost Rider, a book of true ghost stories. Joe, thank you very much for joining me this evening.
Hi, Dave.
Nice now, to be this, here. This is a very interesting life to come from. You know, a lot of people tell us they started by living in a haunted home, but you've actually got kind of a more interesting take on this. You had a grandmother who witnessed many different supernatural phenomena when she was in Europe. Start with us at that point. Tell me some of the stuff that your grandmother related to you, and how old were you when she opened you up to that world?
I was really young. My father's family has a long psychic history. A lot of people on my father's side of the family have had ghostly experiences. But when I was really young, we would go. My grandmother lived in Philadelphia, but had a summer house, an old farm. The house was built like in the 1820s, and ironically, it wasn't haunted. But the woods around it were haunted. I can get to that a little bit later. But she would tell us stories from the time we were like 5 years old, basically, my brothers and myself. And one that really stood out that got me started on the whole paranormal, you know, interest was a story she told about when she was a little girl of about 5 years old. And she grew up in a little farm town about 50 miles from the Carpathian Mountains in southern Poland. And back in those days, there was no television, no radio, no telephones. So whenever they had like a festival in these small towns, it would be a big deal, like a religious festival or, you know, a holiday. And on one of these festivals, she went with her family to another town that was about a mile away from where they live. And her mother and most of the family left early in a wagon, but her father wanted to stay late. So he stayed with her. She was five, and her little brother was about three, and he kept those two little kids with him. And then they left about midnight, and they had to walk about a mile through the countryside. And it was a foggy night, and as they got to this crossroads, there was a woman who appeared, basically, and she was covered from head to toe with like a white veil and was just standing in the fog, basically. And she said her father, like, his hand tensed up on hers. He just tightened his grip, and she could tell, even though she was really young, that something was weird, you know, the way he responded. And as he got close to this woman, he greeted her with like a standard greeting in Poland, which is basically, may the Lord be with you. And the rejoinder or response is, and with your spirit. And when he said, may the Lord be with you, this woman said, and with your spirit. And then they walked past her. He pulled my grandmother by the hand and stepped up his pace. And as soon as they got past her, my grandmother turned around to look, and the woman was gone. And that was, you know, I thought that was pretty creepy, basically.
Well, now you're a very creative man and intelligent. Did you ever question that maybe Grandma embellished some of these stories and she had the creative gene as well?
That's an interesting point, because a lot of people think that because I'm a writer that I make up some of the ghost stories that I tell, which are true. And my theory is that people who are creative basically are using the left side of your brain or the right side of your brain, which is more creative and also I think tends to be have more psychic abilities. Basically, one of my favorite shows is Celebrity Ghost Stories, and I know if you've watched it.
Sure. But
a lot of great stories on there. And one thing that's, when you write something, especially like writing movies in Hollywood, a lot of times there was a lot of frustration because when you come up with an idea, you would have to really try to race to get it finished and then shop it around, because a lot of people would come up with the same ideas at the same time. And it was like a truism among writers, would always talk about how things were in the ozone or in the atmosphere, basically, the ideas. And it's a lot harder to come up with. If you see the stories that come out on like Celebrity Ghost Stories and other shows, they're things that writers wouldn't come up with. There's so many different varieties of paranormal experience that it's, you know, I honestly think that people that are creative are more prone to these experiences, basically. And it's not, I also don't think she made it up. I think because she told other stories too. There were maybe half a dozen stories that she told, and it wasn't like she constantly made stories up. It's like she had a handful of stories that she stuck to, basically. And that was one of them. Another one was about a man that she saw who was locked up. He was supposedly possessed by demons. And she described, this was long before The Exorcist came out, basically. And she told us stories about how they kept him chained up in the barn, basically on a chair, when he would get into his states of possession. And she said it was one day she was there when he was having one of these fits, and she went and sort of peeked in through the door. And she said that it was just the way she described all the voices coming out of him and multiple voices and animal sounds that were coming out all at the same time, basically. It's, you know, pretty much what they depicted in The Exorcist in the movie. But, you know, she was telling the story 15 years before The Exorcist came out, basically.
Now, did she live long enough to see a movie like The Exorcist?
No, she wouldn't have seen it. She got a very simple life. She basically, you know, she lived with her cat and was just quiet and very, you know, she didn't need a lot of, she was very meditative, basically.
But I was just curious, yeah, if she had ever been exposed to a movie like that and said, wow, that is exactly what I witnessed, those type of actions.
And it would have been interesting if, you know, to do that. But I don't know if she would have, she wasn't into movies or anything. Her farmhouse was really remote. It was in this area of South Jersey on a road called Moores Beach, which is really just, I mean, it was nothing, but we loved going out there. It was just a mosquito-ridden, you know, totally undeveloped area. And one night, I was really surprised that all the time I spent there that it wasn't haunted. But one night, two of my uncles had homes also on this road, basically. It was a very remote country road, basically. And one night, I was visiting my uncle down the road, you know, about 300 yards down the road. And I left after dark to come home back to the farmhouse where my grandmother was. And as I was halfway there were woods. The woods are just so impenetrable. They're all thorny and they're filled with ticks and just really kind of nobody would ever go into those woods in the daytime, let alone at night. And nobody was on the road. And I was halfway home and all of a sudden I started to get pelted with like these little green apples from a tree that was growing near the woods, basically. And I know that nobody was around and nobody could have been, no physical human was there, basically. It was really weird. And they were also incredibly accurate with their aim, considering that it was like a pitch dark road with no lights. So that was my one experience down in that area.
Now, you mentioned that the woods around your grandmother's house were known to be very haunted.
That's what I, you know, that was the one case where I was hit with that. It was like a poltergeist kind of attack. Or later when I read about the Bell Witch, it kind of had that thought of like a creepy spirit that was sort of like lurking in the woods, basically.
Was there ever any legend or lore around that area of why it was so active in the woods?
No, actually, it's really close to to Leeds Point, which is where the Jersey Devil was born, basically. It was only about maybe 5 or 10 miles from there. So, and the woods around there are very, it's a pretty spooky area, basically, at night. But her house, you know, and sadly, I mean, the house was a great house. It was really a beautiful old farmhouse. And then in the 80s, my uncle sold it to a preacher, and he rented it to somebody, and then he let it go, and now it's like totally it's abandoned, basically, and it's all overgrown with weeds and vines, and it's really kind of sad.
Have you ever had the inclination to go back there, especially knowing that the area was supposed to be haunted, to see if there's anything you could pick up now as an adult?
I have visited. I've driven by, but I haven't really gone into the house or anything. And I have my hands full here in Philadelphia with ghosts, believe me.
really?
First let me say that I've lived in probably at least half a dozen haunted houses in my life. Starting from when I was a kid, and I lived in one house that had a lot of activity, and it was really focused on me more than my brothers and the other people in my family. And they actually were really skeptical about it, but there were things that would happen. A lot of times my keys would disappear, and I've always been a night person. And so on like Saturdays, I would always sleep late. My brothers would get up and be out of the house. My mother worked, and my father either worked, and if he wasn't working, he was at the racetrack, basically. So typically on a Saturday, I'd wake up maybe at 11 o'clock, and I'd be home alone. And when I would try to go out, I couldn't find my keys. I always kept them on my dresser in the same place, and they would be gone. And basically, I didn't want to go out and leave the house unlocked so I could get back, and I didn't want to go out and get stranded somewhere, not be able to get back in the house. So I would, you know, I would be stuck in the house, basically. And then as soon as somebody came home, even before they went upstairs, the keys would be back on my dresser. They would just sort of rematerialize. But the weirdest thing that happened in that house, when I was about 14 years old, it was a June night. It was really kind of a, you know, it was nice weather, and it was, I like to stay up late and watch television, and everybody else would be asleep because they were all day people. And it was a Friday night, school was out, and I was downstairs watching the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and I had a dog named Killer who was a really tough mutt, basically. I mean, he was afraid of nothing. And at one point, the commercial came on, and I ran into the kitchen, and I filled up a tumbler with orange juice, and I brought it back into the living room, and my mother had the ironing board set up because I had four brothers, and basically she was always doing housework, basically.
Right.
And I put the glass down on top of the ironing board, and I ran upstairs to take a leak. And when I was halfway down the stairs, I saw the tumbler it looked like somebody, an invisible hand, just knocked it over sideways. And the juice went all over the floor. And I stopped for a second, but I just instantly rationalized that, well, maybe the cover of the ironing board absorbed some liquid and this, it, you know. And I ran downstairs, went into the kitchen, and got a towel to come in and clean it up. And I cleaned it all up, and I went into the kitchen area, and I was wringing out the towel, and I saw, and Killer came walking around, and he stood in the doorway between the living room and the kitchen. And so I assumed that he wanted to go out in the backyard, and I went over to the door, and I opened it to let him out, and instead he started to growl. And I turned around and I looked at him, and he was just standing locked in the doorway, and all his hackles were up, and his eyes were just glowing, and his teeth were bared, and he was growling and staring at a spot like right next to me. And between a glass falling over and that was enough, and I just tore past him and ran upstairs. And I got to the top of the steps, and I don't know how, but he actually passed me on the way up, and he turned around and looked at me and gave me a look as if to say, like, did you see what I saw? And I gathered my courage, basically, and I ran downstairs and I turned off the TV and I locked everything up and I went up to bed early that night. But a lot of things. Another time I had a fever, and my mother put me up in my bedroom. I was so weak that I couldn't even walk, basically. I had a really serious fever. And at some point, I got a feeling that there was a spirit, and I had never, at this point, really done any kind of research or learned anything about spirit possession or whatever. But I felt that there was like an unseen presence that was trying to invade my body or sort of, you know, take over. And I was so terrified that I actually literally crawled down the upstairs hallway and crawled down the stairs, basically. And when my mother found me, she was trying to get me to go back upstairs, and I refused to go up. And so she made a bed for me on the sofa, and I stayed down there for the rest of the day. But it was pretty strange. And then,
have you ever felt threatened? We got about 2 minutes left together in this segment, but have you ever felt threatened or frightened by this, as though not just surprised, but that you might actually be in danger?
I was frightened then, without even understanding a lot about spirit possession. But in the house I'm in now, this house, I bought it for about a sixth of what the current value was on the market at the time. But the house had been abandoned for 30 years. It's in a nice neighborhood. And I moved in and I fixed it up. And a lot of things happened in this house. I mean, I could go on for an hour about all the different, this is probably the most haunted house I've ever lived in. But two things that were pretty scary. One of them was I woke up in bed once. I felt as if there was something. It's that feeling that other people have described where you're sleeping and all of a sudden you're just wide awake, basically. And I rolled over and I looked, and along the wall, the only way I could describe it is if you pictured a black mat blanket that somebody sort of pulled into a cone. So it was about 3 feet high, and on top of it was a skull sort of staring at me. And it sounds pretty creepy, but basically I leaned across with my hand and I just kept swatting at it. And it took about maybe 5 or 6 seconds but it finally just sort of broke up into little and then disappeared. And ironically, I think that it might have been the spirit of my father who died in this house, and that he was, it was his way of sort of pranking me, basically.
Joe Augustin, our guest, we have to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We'll hear more about his experiences and get into the Ghostwriter case. That's coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. Good evening. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host for the evening. This is Dave Schrader. I'll be with you for the remainder of the show. Tonight, we're going to be talking about a very strange supernatural happening out of California called the Ghostwriter case. We're talking with the author of a book that's currently being written about this case and about his own paranormal experiences. Joe Augustin is our guest this hour, and he'll remain part of the show with us next hour. We'll take some of your calls and questions for Joe at that time. Joe, you had another story about another very intense moment, kind of a frightening moment for you as well. I'd like to re-examine that before we go into the Ghostwriter case and have us tell us a little bit about that that moment for yourself.
After I've had a lot of things happen here, after there were a lot of deaths in this house, basically. When I moved in, things started to happen that were really dramatic. They would happen when I was wide awake, voices, apparitions, whatever. And I finally talked to the woman next door, and I asked her if there was anything weird that, you know, about this house. And she said, oh, if I were you, I would get a priest in there to bless that house. And she rattled off a just list of the house had only been in the hands of one family for decades. But she rattled off a whole list of deaths in this house, a lot of young people who died mysteriously, and it was really strange. But the one thing that really rattled me was after my father died, like the next night, I heard footsteps downstairs. I was wide awake upstairs, and I heard footsteps downstairs clomping around for like 20 seconds, and it freaked me out a little bit, not a lot. And then 2 days later, the footsteps started again, and I was upstairs, and they went on for about 5 minutes, really loud and distinct. And the thing that scared me was I was terrified that they would start to come upstairs, and if I heard them coming up the steps, I think I would have had a heart attack. And I can't explain why, because I was sure that it was my father, because I took care of him like in his last years, and he could not walk, basically. And I think he might have been coming back to demonstrate that he could walk, because I've heard a story like that from somebody else, where a relative who had been crippled came back and actually appeared and said, look, I can walk. But that was one thing.
When you think it is your dad, his spirit in the house, why do you think now, in retrospect, why do you think you would have been so afraid of it? Was it just the idea that, although maybe it was unnerving?
It was unnerving. That was the one time. And there were other things in his house that should have been scarier and didn't scare me as much. Once I was asleep in the front bed, when I was actually still awake, I was just about to go to bed, and I turned off the lights and I lay down, and then I noticed that there was a big black hulking shadow of the shaped sort of like a man, but gigantic, like 7 feet tall, standing in the doorway. It was just like blacker than the blackness in the doorway. And it literally walked along the side of my bed right up. And I thought it was going to hover over me. And instead it sort of went right to the wall and leaned its head down. And it was sort of like a weird kind of humble position or like sad position. And it just stayed that way for about 10 or 20 seconds. And then it just faded away. And that should have been scarier, but it wasn't. Maybe because it didn't sort of emit any kind of threatening energy. It just looked really kind of ominous looking. Whereas with the footsteps, maybe because there were so much, you know, they were so loud and distinct, basically, and almost like deliberate, like they wanted me to pay attention to them.
Joe Augustin, our guest, go ahead, Joe. I'll let you do that, and then we have to cut away to break again real quick. What was your other story?
One of the other things that was really weird, when I first moved in, I was working on the house, and it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was wide awake. I was checking my email on my computer upstairs in one of the bedrooms, and I heard the back door opening in the house, and then somebody called my name, and it sounded like one of my brothers, my oldest brother, and I thought that he had showed up and was partying in the city or something. It was like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and was coming to try to crash at my place, and I got really pissed off, and I ran downstairs. And there was nobody there. The door was locked. It was bizarre.
Our guest is Joe Augustin. We're going to talk with him when we come back about a very interesting case, the Ghostwriter case. You can go to coasttocoastam.com, look for the Polaroid ghost photos. We've got about six or seven photographs up there from our guest and from Bill Murphy from Sci-Fi Channel's Fact or Fake, The Paranormal Files, who will join us in the next hour and tell us about his experiments in the Ghostwriter house as well. Stay tuned. We've got more Coast to Coast AM and more of the Ghostwriter story right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host for this evening, Dave Schrader. If you'd like to join along, I have a live chat right on darknessradio.com. You can join in with other like-minded individuals interested in the fringe and supernatural. Again, it's at darknessradio.com. You can check me out Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. till midnight Central Time as I explore the supernatural with Darkness Radio. Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show is heard Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. till midnight. And then stay tuned because George Norrie and Coast to Coast comes on right after us. This evening, our guest is Joe Augustin. He's an author. He's a film writer, an active member of the Horror Writers Association. He's currently working on a book about his own paranormal experiences and a very strange story, the Ghostwriter story. For John Matowski, he was living in a perfect suburb of L.A. After moving in, John would claim to hear noises around his house, strange, unexplained noises. And then things took an unexpected turn when a friend of Mr. Matowski, John Huckert, acquired a Polaroid camera. He started taking snapshots around the house, and they both soon started seeing anomalies in these instant photos. At first, it came as odd spectral images, but soon they became words. And as odd as it may seem, whatever was in the house had found a way to communicate. Author and researcher Joe Augustin, our guest, is here to discuss this very unusual case that's been spotlighted in international articles and shows like Sightings and Fact or Fake, The Paranormal Files, and it continues to baffle experts around the world. How did you first hear about this story, Joe?
Well, actually, John Matowski was a friend of mine for about a decade before he moved into this house. And we were both in L.A., and I went to visit him. And he had a roommate at the time who was convinced that there was somebody walking on the roof at night of the house. And he was totally freaked out and paranoid, basically. And we tried to say, well, maybe it's, you know, who knows, was an animal or a raccoon or even a mountain lion. It was because of where the house is situated. And he was like, no, it's boots, or, you know, he was convinced it was a human being. And eventually he moved out. He got so freaked out that he moved out, basically. And then a few years later, I actually stayed in the house. I had moved back to Philadelphia temporarily for a while and then was coming back to L.A., and I needed a place to crash for 2 weeks before my lease was going to open at a new place. And so I stayed at John. We're really good friends, and he had a spare bedroom. And I had a few things happen while I was there. One of them was just a really bizarre lucid dream where he had a really sweet black Labrador named Toots. And one night I woke up, or I thought I woke up, but I was actually dreaming still. And Toots was in the bedroom where I was, staring up at me. And then he opened his mouth and he had these huge fangs, basically. And it kind of freaked me out, but I, for some reason, instinctively, I always, when I confront spirits or whatever, I just find that, like, if I snap my finger in their face or do something simple and aggressive, like swatting them or whatever, that they tend to just disappear pretty quickly. In this case, he turned tail and ran into the dark living room, basically. And then I kind of, at that point, I got up out of bed and walked into the living room. I was aware that I was dreaming, and it was this weird thing. And I decided the room felt really creepy, the living room, and I thought, I don't want to be in this lucid dream. And I just sort of willed myself back to sleep. And the weird thing was, when I woke up the next morning, I had these two little weird vampire-like puncture marks on my foot. And they actually lingered for about a year, that just like the scars from them. It was really weird. And then I've had other things, like just like the apples that were thrown at me in Jersey. One day I was, after Huckert moved in, I visited them and I was leaving, and John was standing on the porch, and I was down below the porch talking to him, like saying goodbye, and something came, pelted me, like right on the head, and John didn't even see it, and I felt it. I mean, I reacted to it, and he was wondering what I reacted to because he didn't see it, and I looked around, and there was nothing on the ground, or it was kind of strange. And another time, in that, this was all before the photograph started, we were sitting around at their table, the two Johns and myself, and we're talking, and all of a sudden the lights just dimmed in the house, and I was like, is that on a timer? And John was like, no, there is no timer. And they didn't even have a dimmer switch, it was just a normal switch. And I got up and I clicked the switch up and down, and the lights went back up again, and we went back to whatever we were talking about for about 20 minutes. And then after about 20 minutes, we brought up the fact that the lights had dimmed. And as soon as we mentioned it, they dimmed again. It was pretty strange. And then it was maybe like a year after that, I think, that John got the first photograph. And I couldn't believe it when I saw them. They were so, the first, I call them the poodle ghosts, basically, because to me they look like, it looks like somebody like skinned a white poodle and just had it, you know, suspended in the air. But the first sequence of these, there were like three Polaroids in a row, and you see the image in one sort of hovering in the air, and then in the next one it's moving towards the camera, basically, and it's a little out of focus. And there's such a life to them when you look at them, that they look alive, basically. And then a few years, I think it was 94 when they had a Halloween party, and I went there, and it's in the evening where it started. It was sort of a typical Hollywood party. I was outside on the patio with friends talking, joking around, and everything was sort of quiet. A lot of people had brought their Polaroid cameras and were in the house trying to get photos, but they were snapping pictures and weren't getting anything. And so it was pretty quiet and subdued, and I think a lot of people were feeling disappointed, and Polaroid film isn't cheap, so things were, you know, there's kind of a lull, but we're still enjoying ourselves outside. And then all of a sudden, there was this, you could feel the energy and the sound from inside the house, like people chattering, and everybody was excited. And I thought, okay, I got to go check this out. And I went into the house, and when I went in there, there were different people who had brought their cameras, and they were all getting, like, ghost photos. And one that was really dramatic, I remember the guy took a picture, there was a young man showed up, and he had a Halloween costume on. He was dressed as the Grim Reaper. And there was another guy who was dressed as Charlie Brown. And somebody took a close-up photo of the Grim Reaper, and there was this weird ectoplasmic form that looked like it was sort of attached to his face, basically. And the guy got so freaked out that he left the party, basically. He couldn't deal with it. And the guy who was dressed in the Charlie Brown costume, in his photo, when it developed, there were all these little ghostly squiggles that it looked like, if they were red, it would have looked like somebody had blown his head off with a shotgun. That's the only way I could describe it. There were just the dozens of these little squiggles that were sort of shooting out from his neck and obscuring his head. And I remembered those photos, that they were close-ups of them. And later, I started to work on the book, like, about 15 years ago, and I wanted John to give me those photos because I wanted to talk about that incident, but he couldn't find those photos because apparently, like, people have ripped off some, they used to be pretty loose with people coming to their house, and they were pretty generous, and people ripped them off, basically. And so I was really disappointed because I really wanted them in. And then finally, when I was working on the book just 2 years ago, John found another photo, and he said, is this the one you were asking me about? And he sent me a copy of it, and it was a different photo. It was a wider angle, but it showed both of those young men, and they had exactly the same ectoplasmic forms. So it was apparently taken by somebody else with a different camera, and they got the exact same effect, basically, which really blew me away, because it is
strange. These ectoplasmic formations take on a Polaroid piece of film, they take on a three-dimensional layer. I mean, you can see what appears to be real form to them, to whereas even the picture of the people that are in there look flat, but these ectoplasmic rings and scrawls actually appear to have a much more rounded three-dimensional look in every way, shape, and form. It's a very bizarre effect.
It is. I mean, the photographs are just, they're so convincing. They're unbelievable. I really feel like these things are alive, basically, when you see them. I have no explanation. I mean, I've been there. When I was at that party, convinced me, but also I wasn't at, sightings came and they shot and they brought a video crew and I wasn't there for that investigation. But when I started to work on the book, John gave me a ton of dailies, basically, or, rough cut, rough video footage that hadn't been cut, but that, was shot for the show. And on one of the tapes, you actually see John takes out a box of Polaroid. The Polaroid Corporation supplied them with a sealed box, a sealed carton of Polaroid film, which contained sealed, Polaroid packets. And one of the investigators takes out one of the packets from the carton and logs the numbers, the code numbers from it, and then tears it open and hands it to John Matkowski, who loads it into the camera on video. So you see him load this film that there's no way he could have tampered with it, basically. It came directly from the factory and then was opened by the producer or one of the, whoever this person was that opened it and handed it to him, and loads it in the camera. And he then asks a question. They ask for somebody in the group to ask the question, and somebody says, "Are you a spirit that's connected to a person or a place?" And when John snapped the photograph, it came out, and the words "genius loci" were on the film. And they looked it up in a Latin dictionary that I think Curry Gaynor, who was the parapsychologist who had also investigated the entity case from UCLA, he was there, and they read the answer was a spirit, genius loci means a spirit that is connected to either a person or a place. And it's an interesting kind of ambiguous answer to the question, basically. But a lot of the messages are really like very concise and very poignant.
And some use Latin or older dead languages, things like that, that they respond in, but they're responding in kind to the actual question that was asked.
Yeah, they always have a specific answer. There's an intelligence at work, basically.
And we do have some of these pictures up, folks, at the coasttocoastam.com website. Just go on and take a peek. Now, it is hard to wrap your head around. I'm not going to lie. I'm a skeptical believer. I've had experiences my whole life, but I still question some of the stuff. And these, I will tell you, look insanely good, too good to be true. But as our guest has mentioned, there's been experiments that have taken place on site in front of camera crews as they will take factory-sealed Polaroid packages and load them into the camera, begin asking questions, and series of pictures will evolve and produce right in front of the camera's eye as it takes place. When you first saw that happen, were you skeptical that maybe they were pulling your leg and pulling, that there was some kind of clear screen or something inside their Polaroid that they had preloaded?
When I saw the first photos, it blew my mind, only because they looked, they literally, to me, they just emanated like a life. I mean, they didn't look phony at all. I just got a feeling from them. But what really convinced me was when I went to this party and I saw people who were guests who showed up with their cameras and were getting the same kind of photos. And the quality was the same, basically. The images all had the same look to them. I mean, if you had five different people who were faking these things, there couldn't have been that kind of consistency. I mean, unless they had a massive conspiracy where, they all did it together at the same time and place. But
And the fact too that they were not out trying to seek fame or fortune or money for this, and they haven't blown this up into something. As a matter of fact, they try to keep a lot of this undercover, makes it even more intriguing. We're going to take a break from our guest Joe Augustine. When we come back after the top of the hour, Bill Murphy from Sci-Fi Channel's Fact or Fake joins us to talk about a few experiments he conducted to put this ghostwriter to the test. Stay tuned. Coast to Coast continues right after this.